Hey everyone, how are you guys doing today? I hope that you all are staying home and staying safe with your loved ones. You're listening to the special edition of EngageCast, a podcast about riveting growth stories. Here we speak with marketers across various industry verticals to answer a few questions like, how has consumer behavior evolved during the COVID phase? The adaptation of new consumer engagement strategies and critical focus areas for brands in 2020. In the last episode, we spoke to Manav Sethi, Group CMO at Eros International. In this episode, we will be speaking with Abhishek Shetty, CMO and Head of E-commerce at Celio India. This episode has been hosted by Priyam Jha, Brand Marketing Manager at WebEngage. So what are you waiting for? Let's get going.
Hi, Abhishek. Thank you so much for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule. I'm sure there's so much of stuff happening at your end. So once again, thank you so much for taking time out to do this. Looking forward to our conversation today.
Thanks, Priyam. It's great to be here. Looking forward to sharing some interesting insights and experiences that we've gathered over the past few weeks. So thanks again for having me.
Brilliant. So Abhishek, very quickly, if you could just give a really rapid introduction of what you're doing right now at Celio.
So I basically handle two departments in Celio. One is the marketing function, another is the e-commerce function. Just to quickly set the context for those of you all who probably don't know a lot about Celio, it's a French menswear fashion brand. We've been in the country now for about 11 odd years. We have about 600 points of sale across 150 odd cities and presence in most marketplaces, e-commerce platforms, as well as offline. So it's been interesting because, I've managed two functions. One is a pure play consumer marketing piece and the other is a sales through and through sales function. So a lot of interesting insights, a lot of action happening as we speak, and a lot of impact also because of the COVID situation. That's about me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Abhishek. So I'll quickly start off with the first question why we are doing the whole podcast right now. Help us understand the impact that COVID-19 has had on your brand. First of all, and of course, do help us with some insights about the impact that COVID has had on fashion and offline retail as an industry as well. And if there is anything that you have seen with respect to an evolutionary trend, as far as your job role is concerned, that will be fantastic to hear about as well.
I think we sit in a sector which gets evolutionary spend, right? And unfortunately, that sector has been hit hard. It's been hit hard for two reasons. One is, even if there is some demand out there, most of us haven't been able to fulfill it because of the lockdown, stores being shut off, warehouses being shut off, etc. The second piece is, if you look at the search trend data, right, there's almost a 50 to 70% drop in fashion searches that are happening today in the country. Wow. It's not just an India phenomenon. This is a global like, even if you look at data coming in from the US, from the UK markets, you will see anywhere around a 30-35% drop in search volumes, even though some of these markets have a fully functioning e-commerce ecosystem.
Okay.
Like India. So in that sense, from a sales standpoint, it has affected the brand quite a bit. Now, I think we've gone 7 weeks without revenue, and it's a very people heavy industry.
Sure.
Employers in the country, and it does impact the company a lot, but we're sort of standing strong. We're using this time to build a stronger business model in place. From a brand standpoint, I think what we're seeing is, to be honest, engagement is surprisingly at an all-time high. So while I think the sales piece is sort of suffering, I think the engagement piece is something that we've been working very actively towards. And I think if as brands, if you're doing a good job today, I think that's a piece where people are focusing a lot. And some of these metrics are seeing about a 20-30% improvement. So I think that's to answer your question. In terms of how the role has sort of evolved personally for me, I think we consider ourselves fortunate enough because about a couple of years, we started this journey of building a digital roadmap. And obviously today, a lot of companies are sort of taken by surprise because, having spoken to a lot of them, I get to know that they're currently building a stronger digital roadmap. In our case, what we need to do is we need to accelerate this journey a little bit faster than what we were planning. So what we were planning for maybe 2022 has to be done for 2021 or even for 2028 for that matter. So a lot of digital immersion, a lot of my role has changed from along with marketing. It's a lot about spending time with the IT enablement piece, a lot of tech partners, understanding how can they make consumers' life easier. And you have these integrated, you have these pieces of technology available because of the vibrant startup ecosystem in India, right? So a lot of the time right now is going on connecting the dots between these bits and pieces. So it's been quite interesting. The role has obviously evolved. The role is a lot more about consumer research, getting sharper, etc. So there has been a slight evolution in that sense. From a sales standpoint, the role obviously has changed because right now there are no numbers being clocked. It's all about building stronger relationships with partners. It's all about changing the way we sell tomorrow, right? There's a lot of talk about how consumers are going to change. How online is going to become the epicenter of the businesses, which is going to move away from the typical brick and mortar setup. So a lot of work around key account management, a lot of work around deciding the future of selling. So I think this is how roles have evolved.
Absolutely. A few of your points have resonated deeply with me. Most definitely, I completely agree about digital transformation being so important right now, especially people who have not yet done it are now scrambling to do it, figure out ways to go digital right now. I'm glad you are sharing some of these points with me. Of course, they must be very difficult right now to really fathom about going 7 weeks without, or whatever that time period is, without revenue because of the way the pandemic has impacted your particular industry. Now, there is an obvious short-term impact that you are talking about, which is the fact that people can't really go out there and check out new clothes, or some people probably do not prioritize fashion right now. What kind of a long-term impact do you foresee from this? Because you mentioned a little bit about changing consumer behavior after the whole COVID-19 pandemic probably dies down. What changes do you foresee which are going to stem from an evolution of consumer behavior for the fashion industry?
I think there are a few short-term trends and there are a few long-term trends that we are sort of discussing currently in the industry. Obviously, a lot of this is based on a bunch of assumptions, but we have reasonable amount of data to say that some of this probably is heading towards the right direction. Right? One is digital escalation. I think we already spoke about it, but digital social distancing, I think, has highlighted the importance of digital channels more than ever. And the lockdown has also elevated an urgent priority across the entire value chain to be more digitally active, right? Consumers will continue to demand more in this space. Brands must be able to act fast to deliver. Now, if you look at China, right? If you look at the post-pandemic scenario, a lot of the social commerce websites like Taobao, for example, which is owned by Alibaba, has seen a 700% increase in traffic. You know, that is some of the impact that COVID has had. And I think that gives us some indication how things are going to be here as well in India. In the short term, discretionary spends are going to be low for a lot of the people because people are still in a stage that we call the survival mindset, about saving money. We do see it normalizing eventually, typically around end of quarter three or by quarter four. Now, there is a parallel school of thought, right? Which is this entire concept of revenge buying, where people are saying that there's a lot of pent up demand. And as soon as things open, consumers are going to go on a shopping spree. Now, interestingly, we've been sort of trying to track this, whether what school of plays out. And it's actually a bit of both, right? So we started operationalizing our website for some pre-orders about a week back, right? And as soon as we opened up, we realized there was a sudden spurt of orders, which sort of made us believe that, hey, this entire concept of revenge buying is sort of working really well. However, about 5, 6, 7 days later, we saw sales numbers coming down, right? So while there is a certain sense of pent-up demand amongst the affluent segment, it's not applicable across the board. So that is what we are seeing in the short term. Even when malls open, there will be a certain segment of people who will be rushing to the stores buying. But over a period of time, I think demand is going to be at least 60 to 80% of what they used to be pre-COVID. That's our sense as of now. Obviously, things could change rapidly. Everything depends on when a vaccine comes. So we're sort of trying to do a lot of work in this area to say, how do we cater to these customers, right? If a customer is scared coming into an offline store, what problems do we need to solve? How do we...
Right.
So a lot of internal work, a lot of strategy, a lot of effort being done in this area as of now.
Awesome. So many cool points, Abhishek. I think the one that I really liked is, of course, about revenge buying. I came across this phenomena very recently. I think China has been experiencing something of that sort happening.
Yeah.
And it's fair to say most definitely that probably the affluent classes would like to splurge a little bit, probably feel a little better with their purchases because everybody has been in a very stressful situation. I think the more important point that you have made, which is very interesting, is to really understand how the offline retail infrastructure is going to evolve to really facilitate free movement of people, because I understand that social distancing is going to be the new normal going forward. Vaccine or no vaccine, I think people have become very, very prevalent about health and safety. So very interesting times, most definitely. Now I want to ask a question which has basically pinched a lot of people in your position, folks who are in marketing, who are taking care of strategy and engagement and communication. They realized when the COVID pandemic hit that the first function to get affected was going to be marketing, because everybody started to realize that there is a need to extend the runway as much as possible, save as much money. And probably marketing budget was a great place to start for most people. I am sure it has affected you guys as well in a very solid way. So how has your marketing and your engagement strategy adapted, or rather reacted, to the COVID-19 situation?
In terms of budgets, you're right. I think it's had quite an impact in terms of the monetary side, right? I mean, I think this is a time where it's more about increasing the runway for each and every company. It's more about safeguarding your cash flows, being more ROI focused, optimized, etc. But this time is also an opportunity. I think if you're going to be one of those marketers who's going to be like, you know, I don't have money at hand and I don't know what to do. I think you're losing out, because this is one time you need to continue talking to your consumers. So when situation normalizes tomorrow and businesses recover, you are able to pull in some of these customers. So do not go in any sort of an hibernation mode with respect to marketing, right? So we fortunately had this discussion very early on, and we said, how do we approach this? Right? So I think some of the changes that we made is we said no to, or we minimized the amount of transactional content that we were putting out, right? So content has always been the king. As millennials and Gen Zs create their impressions, you know, via its digital communication. But it's important that at tough times like these, brands don't be greedy and on people's fears. And that's what we wanted to be very, very careful about, right? And in a certain sense, I'm happy, because this is one time when marketers can focus on the holy grail of marketing, right? Engagement. Because there's always a sales pressure on marketers saying, we need more footfalls, we need more customers, we need more conversions. You know, now look at a scenario where it's actually flipped in the marketer's favor. he can do everything for the sake of building a brand. He can do everything for the sake of engagement. So I think good marketers will find a way to humanize the communication in a manner that people would find reassuring, and compel them to start a conversation with your brand. So identify, we're doing a lot of work in identifying how consumers are spending that additional time. And could we be the brand that engages them, converses with them, builds a solid relationship? Bottom line, I think what we're trying to do is try to be less transactional, more empathetic. Don't hard sell and show some support, right? So we did a bunch of some interesting activities over the last few weeks, like, you know, some trends were bingo challenge, for example. So we gave some of those trends to our customers. We saw good amount of engagement rates. We also tested this offline over, you know, over SMSs, etc. We sent out a message to our customers, sort of taking a jog down the memory lane about how we started our relationship, right? So we just sent a message to our customers saying, hey, you know, this was the first store you purchased from. This was the first product you purchased. This was the date you purchased from. This is your favorite category. We did something. It's actually very simple to do this, right? You're going back, looking at customer data and the kind of engagement that campaign got us. Honestly, in my almost 4 years, CLO, I have not seen the kind of numbers that I saw.
Wow.
Particular campaign, right? So if you're hitting the consumer with the messaging, it is working. And there is enough proof in data and numbers to say that. So we are constantly trying to tell ourselves, let's, you know, keep studying consumer behavior. Let's use social listening tools to understand what consumers are talking about, what does the sentiment analysis look like. The other thing that we're doing is we're reevaluating, relearning and retargeting, right? Now, this is the best opportunity that we've got to study our consumers on a deeper level than would have normally. So we are churning out a lot of historic data to identify and unearth different sort of consumer insights we feel will be very, very actionable, and make consumers drive stronger action. So to give you an example, we are building new cross-sell and upsell models as we speak, right? We are looking at different ways now to simplify this. If you are a consumer today buying only a t-shirt with CLO, what is the most likely upsell category that I can get you into? Is it a
interesting
denim? And how do I do it? Right. What is the preferred mode of communication? Is it an email? Is it an SMS? How do you prefer to be spoken about? What time of the day do you prefer to be spoken about? So we're using this time to understand and evaluate and introspect, saying who are our most profitable customers? You know,
brilliant.
I think some of these data points are really helping us prepare a solid strategy for marketing when things normalize. And that's what we're doing. And thirdly, I think, and lastly, building a strong IT system in place. You know, this is the golden period. I think IT teams across the world are fed up with most of their team members because the amount of work that they have at this point in time. I mean, I feel really bad for them because I see emails at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the night, and they are the ones who are working overtime. And I mean, I feel it's a really tough time for them because
kudos to them. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, brilliant. So Abhishek, I'm so glad that you shared those points, and I completely agree about IT folks because they're now being forced to relook into all of the infrastructure, making sure the product is better when demand is back. At the same time, I feel bad for folks in design teams as well because they are also now working overtime, most definitely. Now, I'm going to hang on to the point that you have made about the stuff that you can do right now, of course, identifying the right set of customers to target, and of course, figuring out what these people are doing right now, how they're spending their time. It's a great way to be. And of course, humanizing the connect. Like you mentioned, the campaign that you did resonated so well. I've had this question for quite some time. I'm trying to understand that since there is a massive dip right now in demand, and you foresee that probably 60 to 70% of the original demand that you guys saw generally pre-COVID only 60 to 70% of that is going to return, maybe, if all things are, let's say, as planned. How do you plan to reignite the demand for a category like fashion, which probably isn't that essential?
Correct.
Because the trends in the economy right now aren't very positive. We are probably headed towards a recession, which is going to hit us hard for a long time. And fashion might not be the first priority or even the second priority for a lot of your consumers, that which should have been something very different earlier. How do you plan to kind of capture that, reignite that demand?
So there are two, three things that are right. One is demand. There's going to be a demand shift. So there's going to be a channel realignment of sorts. So if you look at India from a fashion perspective, majority of our sales still comes from brick and mortar stores, right? Yep. And about 60 to 70% of the business for most companies still come from brick and mortar stores. That's going to realign, right? So there's a shift in channel focus that we're currently doing. Like, for example, we launched Celio.in, which is our own captive website, about a little more than a year back. And the kind of growth numbers that we're seeing over there is honestly quite surprising.
Right?
Very, very fast rate. So because customers are moving away from traditional shopping methods. So one is, how do you readjust your entire channel focus, right? Are you focusing on captive websites? We are looking at avenues to make Celio.in also a lot more interactive, a lot more consumer friendly. So we're looking at personalization in a big way. We're looking at AI in a big way. We're looking at the concept of a virtual trial room, because customers can't physically try out a product. So we are sort of doing meeting companies and evaluating a lot of startups in this phase who are doing some good work. So one is, how do you readjust the channels according to where customers are, right? Earlier, if I could say from a consumer point of view, companies followed a strategy of being omnipresent, right? They like wanted to be everywhere. Now I think it's going to be more and more about being present at that moment of customer. Right. If he's searching for you, for example, search volumes have gone down today. If he's searching for, you know, the best shirt out there, you know, are you present? Are you putting your bucks where it matters, where that consumer? So one clear indicator that we're getting in wherever we've opened up a couple of stores, right? And we've seen trickle down what's happening. An early customer trend that we're noting is the consumer is coming in being a lot more sure about what he wants. So if you look at historically fashion, about 60 to 70% of fashion buying was on impulse purchases. Mm-hmm. Now that trend is reversing. I think only about 30 to 40% will be impulse. About 70 to 80% is going to be planned purchases. So as a company, you need to do a better job of being amongst the top of mind brands in the consumer's mind, right? So being amongst the 2 to 3 brand set that he has in his mind. So make your marketing monies work harder. The second is hyper-personalization. Is something that we're looking at in a very, very serious way. So earlier we would do consumer segments, you know, maybe on a regional level or a city level, and target customers, layout offers. Now, again, we are breaking that down into maybe store-wise. Sometimes within store-wise, we're looking at individual one-to-one communication metrics. So we are building a CRM program where we can sort of dice insights and create communication at a one-on-one level. At this
amazing. Point.
So a lot becomes about conversion. If your typical industry conversion rates used to hover around anywhere between 8% to about 14-15%, right? Now those conversion rates need to be upward of 20-25% for you to be able to make up for demand. I don't think there is a way to suddenly change the consumer's perspective on saying, you know, you need to be fashion. The other change that we are trying to bring about is on the product piece, right? Mm-hmm. What is happening now because of the trend of working from home, but also being able to attend virtual meetings and being able to work out at home, the concept of activewear is going up hugely. Now, activewear are, you know, more of sports fashion. So that industry and that section of the within the fashion industry is going to grow at a much faster rate than maybe the formals market or the blazers market. So we're looking at that segment a little bit more seriously. We are trying to see how can we bring in more breathable fabrics into our collection, which, you know, also look good enough for the consumer to attend a meeting in, for example. Well,
that's a great insight.
So those are some of the things that we're trying to do. And the I think bottom line is you need to be a lot sharper. Hyper-personalization is going to be a big answer for you to solve this problem. And those are the things that we are trying to do.
Awesome, awesome. I'm so glad that you mentioned hyper-personalization. That's one of my most favorite things to talk about. Webbing Edge, of course, wants people to really understand the impact of hyper-personalization, and it really matters a lot more now, which brings me to my next question. It's basically about understanding the kind of engagement strategy that you feel right now is going to be the most effective. And of course, not just for Celio, but for any digital consumer business. What is it that marketers really need to kind of get right with their user engagement strategy?
So I think the problem historically with a lot of marketers, including me, has been, you know, we sometimes sit in our offices and we make assumptions about what the consumers want, right? And if we want something, we also make the assumption like this is how the consumer thinks, right? Sometimes it works out, sometimes most times I've seen a lot of us being wrong about it. I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to unearth a lot of search trends. What are people searching for? What are people consuming? Where are people consuming? So some initial things, that trends that if you look at it, right? And I think this has been happening for a while. Video in India, the conversion rates that we're seeing on video assets versus a standard print asset or picture asset is vastly different. We see at least 1.5x to 2x better conversions on video compared to standard, you know, picture assets. So I think a lot of there's a lot of requirement demand from the consumer for good quality video content. Right, that's number one. Number two is a lot of consumers today, we realize, are searching for best of or near me searches. You know, a lot of it has become hyperlocal. Search trends have moved hyperlocal, right? If you're able to cater to hyperlocal searches as a brand, using your offline presence positively, I think you're going to gain a lot in the next few years. And if you look at pre-COVID data, I'm not even mentioning COVID data, pre-COVID data, hyperlocal searches were growing 70% to 80%. Now, COVID has only accelerated it. So hyperlocal searches are now growing at least 150 to 200% month on month, right? So as a brand, please, please, please attack hyperlocal search queries. I think the other thing is also move to more video-oriented platforms, social commerce platforms. So the next wave of growth is going to come in the form of social commerce. You know, you are seeing some of these startups in the B2B space like Udaan, etc. But you also have a few in the B2C space right now, Bulbul, Simsim. You know, they're trying to make a dent in the social commerce space. It still hasn't reached the metros. It's still a tier two phenomena. But we are following that space closely to sort of understand how it plays out and whether as a brand, do we need to be present. So let me give you an example right now. For example, I'm sitting at home. I would want to know how to style for a web interview, right? You know, what are some of the things that I should, I mean, this is just an example that I'm trying to give, but are brands making content for that? You know, so it's becoming interesting what consumers want. I think you rightly pointed out the whole health and wellness space and the way consumers are looking at personal health is sort of changing significantly. The other significant piece that personally I feel that's going to play out is the sustainability piece, right? I think this pandemic is going to bring values around sustainability into sharp focus. It's going to intensify discussions and further polarize views around materialism, overconsumption, irresponsible business practices. So the focus on sustainability will be especially prominent for the Gen Zs and the millennial shoppers. whose concerns for the environment were already at a high stage pre-crisis. Now, as a marketer, I think it's important that you realize this. And more than a marketer, as a company, it's critical to realize this trend early on. And start making changes in your supply chain, your business model, the way you operate, the way you source. How do you build transparency across your entire value chain to say, I'm an ethical, value chain. Source ethically, I build products. Are sustainable. I think the concept of fast fashion, as we've known for the past decade or so, is going to change a bit.
Super, super. So many cool points, Abhishek, which I want to tie into my next question. It's about retention, user retention. And brands, of course, are now finding it very hard to probably go the original acquisition heavy route because that was always very expensive. And now they are not really sure if they want to kind of spend that kind of money. And like you rightly mentioned earlier in our conversation that you're trying hard to identify these segments of your best users, guys who have who you know are going to spend on your platform, who love the platform or the product for what it for the kind of value it offers rather than a discount maybe. So you are obviously trying hard to identify these customers. And what I want to understand is how important is retention going to be now, going forward, when you do realize that you start servicing the need that is present once things go back to normal? And do you have a specific retention strategy right now for COVID?
I think retention honestly has always been one of the most critical aspects about marketing, right? Because if you have a leaking tap in place, I think no matter how much you acquire people, if people are going to constantly leave your business, then you're never going to make money. And that's the truth. So, but you need to know which consumers are worth running behind, which consumers are probably not. And I think that's been the historical problem, at least within the startup ecosystem in India. Right? They've been running behind customers who are probably just deal seekers. Right. So if you're able to identify that using your data, I think you will know whether to spend your money at the right place or not. We are using a few methods to identify and build a stronger retention strategy. One is obviously the typical customer lifetime value, right? So understanding what our lifetime value is. But if you look at customer lifetime value, it's basically a projection of how this customer is going to behave in the time to come and his net present value in a certain sense. So you're sort of trying to predict his behavior, right? The other piece to the puzzle is, are you constantly monitoring? Can you slap current buying trends from the same customer to identify whether he's following the CLTV approach that you had first identified? If not, if there's a variation, then immediately identify whether he's a customer who's going to be a money sucker or somebody who's going to get you a lot of money in the times to come. So as per our data, when we look at if we have had customers who've stayed with us for more than 2 years, they become extremely profitable customers. Even though you're constantly rewarding them more than average, higher than average, they constantly come back to you with higher profits. And you don't need to spend a lot of time, energy, effort, and money trying to get them back into the store. So we've put in a fast track program in place to try and identify behaviors early on to say this customer is mimicking the approach of a star or a loyal customer. Can we fast track him into that sort of a space, right? Now it comes to lapsed and deep lapsed customers. Customers who are probably on the verge of lapsing and leaving your funnel, or customers who've already lapsed out of the program and it's hard to sort of bring them back. So we've put in separate strategies in place to say that, these are a combination of, again, we've identified there are customers who are probably more discount seekers and there are customers who probably are more category seekers, right? So simplify and personalize your communication as per which consumer, according to you, is seeking what. So if it's a customer who's seeking a new innovation product, we constantly expose him to, every single innovation that we bring into the market and hope that he comes and shops back at our store. And it's given us a reasonably good response. We've managed to decrease our retention rate by 20% in the deep lapse segment by doing that.
Amazing.
And the discount seekers are a little bit more call to action, right? What we do is, for example, when you have your end of season sale happening, that's when you try and reach out to them, because you know that they are most likely to respond around that time. So there is retention, I feel, is a very important part of the consumer puzzle and the company marketing funnel, so as to say. And I think any company that is not attacking it today is going to suffer.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Those insights were really amazing, Abhishek. I think I'm pretty sure a lot of marketers will be able to use that in their own marketing campaigns. Sure. Which brings me to the very last question that I have for you. Do you think we are headed towards a work from home future?
I think in some industries, definitely, yes. I speak to my sister who works in the IT space, where work from home was sort of a norm even before the COVID situation. And now she says that our company is only realizing that, hey, we can do this for a larger set of audience. You know, they've already sort of invested in systems to make work from home possible, right? So they're like, might as well cut costs on office spaces, etc. I don't think it will be a possibility for every industry. Like in our industry, I feel collaboration becomes very key. We are a lot about, seeing products, touch, feel, and things like that. So it's not always going to be possible for the product teams have to be more physically involved in offices around each other, testing fabrics, testing quality, checking out the colors, lights, etc. So in a large number of industries, I feel yes. In some industries, I feel it's still going to go back to normal. However, the one good thing that's come out of this is, as a marketer, when you're trying to walk the digital journey, too often the internal stakeholders become a challenge than external stakeholders for a lot of people, right? Now, this entire experience is making the entire organization a lot more digitally inclined, a lot more digitally friendly.
Absolutely.
It's been easier to push through of initiatives with that sense. So,
excellent point. Most definitely, digital transformation win for everybody. Superb. Yes. Thank you so much, Abhishek. I really enjoyed this conversation. So many amazing insights. Thank you so much for the cadence and for all of those honest and positive replies that I got from you. I'm hoping that things come back to normal for Celio and for the brand, for you as well. And great conversation. Thank you.
Thanks, Priyam. Nice to be here and great chatting with you.
So that's all we had in store for episode number 3. We will be back soon with episode number 4. It features Abhishek Patil of Cred. Till then, stay home, stay safe, and take care of yourselves. See you soon.